She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
Hi, and welcome to Casual Trek, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Ty and the merry-go-round What Turns You Into a Robot. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and an Event Horizon fan.
And I'm Mars Reed Lobato, a writer and a fan of Black Hole, the Charles Byrne alternative press indie comic.
See, I've been reading it. I'm like seven issues in, and frankly, I'm nonplussed.
I mean,
It's all right. I guess if I was actually 17 and reading it, I'd have been a lot more excited.
I think there's also that part of, it's one of those things that it's a book that's so rooted in American suburbia that just there's part of it we have a disconnect from because we as British and the world don't work like that.
Well, it makes me want to rewatch Freaks and Geeks, which is, you know, remove the powers and add some pathos.
Yeah.
And there you go. So yeah, that's our review of the Black Hole. Goodbye, everyone.
We're all going on a summer holiday.
Yeah, it's summer. It's too warm. I live in a building site. The derangement has set in. So, as I've mentioned a few times previously on this podcast, I've never seen Disney's The Black Hole. So what better mental state to do this in? While I'm feeling detached from reality and isolated on a big echoey ship.
Wait. So your mind is putty enough that my saying, hey, we should finally watch The Black Hole, and you said yes. Did I just miss the perfect opportunity to make hashtag Blake's Boys happen?
Yeah, and the moment's passed now.
Damn it! Damn it!
Yes. Yes. So, before we talk about this Disney classic, Miles, what non-black hole thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
Oh, God, how wild do I make this? I am actually currently reading a book. What a surprise, I know. It is a very chunky tome. It is King Sorrow by Joe Hill, son of Stephen King.
Oh.
It is his most recent novel. The best way I can describe it, it's kind of It, but if It had a magic dragon instead of a Lovecraftian clown monster.
Okay.
Basically, a bunch of college friends, one of whom is being blackmailed to steal rare books from the university where he studies. They decide to get high one night and summon a dragon using a Necronomicon-style mystic tome that was being stored in this library. And thus they have brought King Sorrow into the world. And King Sorrow is a golden dragon who kills the blackmailers. But due to the fine print, he now demands a sacrifice every Easter.
Oh.
Or else he's going to kill them. And thus, the plot escalates from there.
Okay. I've only read a couple of Joe Hill books. For some reason, I always feel like, what if Stephen King plus kind of Dark Horse?
I can kind of see that. There are some outright references to the King of Earth. There is a reference to the Dead Zone in this book. There is a subtle reference to the Dark Tower, well, the opening line of the Dark Tower.
Right.
King and Hill's books do kind of sometimes interlap. Doctor Sleep, the sequel to The Shining, does have a few references to Nosferatu, Hill's vampire novel. But then again, you know what? Stephen King is incestuous enough to reference all of his books, even without the excessive amount of cocaine. So I feel it is completely in tradition of Stephen King and son of Stephen King to have each other's books exist in each other's universes.
mean, unless they've begun to merge.
Oh God, that would be terrifying.
Can only tell because they're both referring to the same universe. And this is Stephen's experiment. He created a clone body in order to publish even more books. Well,
I'm 300 pages in right now, and it's okay. A lot of fun. Like it, the second time I tried to read it, the first 50 pages are very slow going, but when it picked up, it really does pick up. As much as, you know, some very kind of cynical part of me would love to say, oh, Joe Hill only has a publishing gig because of his dad, Joe Hill is deservedly a good writer in his own right.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he's all right. I've not gone massively out of my way to read a lot of his work, but I should read some more, really, because I've enjoyed what I have read.
And so, Charlie, what non-Star Trek, non-black hole thing have you been enjoying this week?
Well, I've been to the cinema.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've been to Creepy Crawly, to the IMAX, and I've seen woke classic The Odyssey by Christopher Nolan. It's good fun. Like, I like The Odyssey anyway. I think I prefer it to The Iliad, but I like a lot of the wacky bullshit from The Odyssey a bit more, and I've read and seen numerous adaptations. And
does this include the greatest adaptation, French Japanese co-production Ulysses 31?
Of course. And yeah, and was it Matt Fraction's Odyssey with Christian Ward?
I wish that had continued. I really enjoyed that comic.
Yes. And yeah, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And numerous written adaptations and so on and so on. I was worried watching the trailers that it was trying to be a bit too, stoic about everything, and that it was going to diminish the wacky bullshit. I'm pleased to report the wacky bullshit is still in the film.
Fantastic.
It's still in the story. Tom Holland is still odd as Telemachus, but you know, he gives a lot of boy mayor energy, which I guess fits for the character. Penelope, played by Anne Hathaway, is good in the role and feels a bit more there than a lot of Christopher Nolan women in his films. Matt Damon, it's taken me ages to remember that it's Matt Damon, because I have a blind spot with him, where previously I've not been able to tell the difference between him and Mark Wahlberg. And now, especially when he's old Odysseus, it's like, has Josh Brolin got a bit better? Like, you know, a bit healthier and a bit younger looking. So yeah, he's quite good in the role. He's like, Odysseus is someone who is often cunning. Like, he is smart. He is not necessarily big or buff or anything, but he is clever. And that is both his benefit and drawback, really. And it does a good job of that, as well as going, whoa, it's a bit fucking awful. And everything that it unleashes is really bad. Guys, don't do any of this. This guy has done a bunch of stuff. There's a lot of running away from islands, a lot of running away from problems, and that is a glorious thematic through line through the whole thing. And it does a good job of not glorifying all of it. Again, I was concerned seeing the giant armored guys and the giant Batman armor for Agamemnon, but it is just Agamemnon who has that. And he is sparingly used, as is Zendaya's Athena, and just the presence of any kind of gods or weird stuff, which, again, I was concerned, having seen a lot of Emma playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where the lead character, Cassandra, is very much like, gods, that's not really anything. It's like, mate, that's not how it was back then.
Yeah,
you know, there wasn't the, oh yes, I'm an enlightened atheist, you know, I don't believe in any of this. So no, you'd be weird. You'd be really weird if you were the person that did that.
You'd be in a cave smelling of shit.
Yeah, well, it's like one of my players who kept being, well, like, oh no, in D&D, the last time I ran it several years ago, the Forgotten Realms, gods are everywhere. They are literally real, and they keep coming down and bothering with everyone's business. There was a time where they were deposed and became mortal for a bit, and then they came back up. And he's like, no, my character doesn't believe in gods, actually. It's, I mean, mate.
See, it's kind of like... It's kind of like Mr. Terrific in DC Comics, where he is a confirmed atheist in a world where he hangs around with Wonder Woman every couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there's, Zuriel? Was it?
There's Zuriel. There's Ragman. There is the entire reincarnation that is Hawkman.
Yeah, Spectre.
Yeah.
And so on. So yeah, overall, I very much enjoyed The Odyssey. It feels like it's, I don't know, it's interesting when you see a director have multiple faces. Because this was a Christopher Nolan joint, but this is Christopher Nolan that did that war film that I keep forgetting the name of, that I saw with my brother, because I can't be arsed with war films a lot of the time.
Dunkirk?
Dunkirk, that's it. Which was all right. It was all right. Compared to Christopher Nolan doing Inception and Tenet, where he's getting real weird with it, but wants to show a bunch of guys in suits getting into some weird genre hijinks.
See, I always find it funny when people say that Christopher Nolan has no sense of humor in his films, because there are visuals in Tenet which I feel have to be deliberately meant to be funny, and it is all the backwards time bending shit.
Well, yeah, it's like Jonathan Hickman, where people go, oh no, he's not very funny. And don't get me wrong, when he's writing a specifically humor comic, he is not very funny. But he can do a lot of fun things and has written a lot of humor in his stories. It's just, again, the ones where, like, long shots from the Age of Revelation, where it is supposed to be a funny book. No, John, leave it alone. But yeah, anyway, we should probably crack on with talking about what this whole black hole nonsense is. Now, I knew very little about this going in. I knew it was a Disney film. I knew it was from a long time ago. It was released on the 19th of December, 1979. So the final December without me existing in it. Yeah. Its story was by Jeb Rosebrook, Bob Bardash, and Richard Landau. And the screenplay was by Jeb Rosebrook and Jerry Day, directed by Gary Nelson. And we've mentioned a couple of times the issue with talking about what the number one hits were of these eras. And Miles, you'll be pleased to know the UK number one hit was Pink Floyd.
Yes!
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 And yeah, this, they were number one with Another Brick in the Wall, part two. Yes. And US had Rupert Holmes with Escape, the Pina Colada song, which feels like a very, a bit of a difference between nations. So yeah, great to see Pink Floyd doing well there.
Yeah.
And I knew that people who cited horror films like Event Horizon said, yeah, a bit of black hole in there. It's like, right, course, that Disney film, Black Hole, sure, mate. Let's see how wrong I was proved by my skepticism about this. So normally when we cover a film, it's a 10-minute run, and rather than do anything like try and pass the baton back and forth, I, as the person that hasn't seen this before, have been volunteered as the recapper. So, sit back and good luck.
Okay, Charlie, you have 10 minutes to recap Disney's PG-rated... Hang on, was this PG or G?
It was PG. It was their first ever PG movie.
Oh, damn. Okay. Like, don't forget, like, back in the day, films like Logan's Run, I think, was technically a G-rated film. And that has boob. That has boobie in it.
Do you mean a U for Universal?
Yes, but also I think G for like that. The US one is G.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Most of our audience are from America, but yeah. You've been listening to us waffling. You're getting it as a PG film. Rather than whatever okay. that is. Anyway.
Okay. You have 10 minutes to recap this film, or else Maximilian is going to introduce you to his spinny, spinny, spinny fun blade.
Oh, the spinny blades.
Okay. All right. Get your best Ernest Borgnine on and begin.
So we get 2.5 minutes of a black screen and triumphant music, then another 1.5 minutes of opening credits. I was so happy that my recap was going to be easy. It really isn't. Anyway, it's space, the final frontier, day 547 of exploring space, and the Palominos distracted from its return trip to Earth by the existence of a black hole. The crew are Captain Dan Holland, a generic space captain, Charles Pizer, a hot-headed youth, Harry Booth, the mandatory old man and kook from this era of sci-fi, a telepathically sensitive Dr. Kate McCrae, Alex Durant, who is Anthony Perkins, and Vincent, a robot who looks like a bin they've painted some eyes on and sounds like a real swat. Harry says, the black hole looks like something out of Dante's Inferno. Put a pin in that, Harry. Pizer says it looks almost like he'd expect to see a devil there. Put a pin in that, Pizer. Well done, guys. You've predicted the movie. There's a ship floating near the black hole, the USS Cygnus, an American ship which Kate's dad served on before it vanished. The boss there was one Dr. Reinhardt, an arrogant genius. The lights are out in the ship and the Palomino does a flyby to investigate, although it gets a bit tricky and the Palomino spins out a bit because of a gravitational pull. A hatch gets blown and Vincent's sent out to fix it. Kate apparently uses ESP to communicate with him and his rope snaps, but he fires another one out, seeing the ship from outside, all scenic-like. And as the flyby continues, the ship lights up like a Christmas tree. Yes, Kate swears she saw a person and points at a blurry picture. And well, they'll need to repair the ship anyway, so why not dock and see what's there? There's gravity on board, thank God, for budget's sake. And everyone heads out, apart from Pizer, who's left behind to guard the ship. He does a fun little quick draw to no one in particular. The ship is massive on the inside. It is huge. It's empty. And Kate feels like she's being watched. They're guided through a door, another door, a little railway cart thing, through a tunnel on the outside of the ship and into a lift. Vincent has a bad feeling about this. And we do too, as there are some red robot sentries looking like Pernell and Darth Vaders who have woken up. There's a fancy bridge and robed figures in silhouette moving around, gesturing at images of planets and other robed figures at terminals. An ominous-looking robot floats down and shows off its spinny arms. Is this in charge? And no, a voice says off-screen. It's Maximilian. We meet the real ruler of this place, a Hans Reinhardt, the aforementioned mad scientist. He's got a fantastic beard and a red jumpsuit, which screams late 1970s sci-fi. And Rusty Venture as well. It feels like Rusty Venture would wear this outfit. He welcomes them, and Kate asks after her dad, God, just rip that plaster off. He is real dead, cold bum and everything. The human crew, Hans says, oh, they totally left here. Did they not make it back? And no, they didn't. He's made a ton of robots here from something and made them look ominous as hell because he's a weird freak. Pizer gets dragged in by the sentries, but it's all fine. Hans says, no, they're guests. They can repair their ship and then fuck off. Also, he wants to chat with the doctors. And yeah, Vince is kind of skittish about Maximilian. Hans compares himself to Columbus, another red flag there. And Maximilian gives everyone the tour, brushing aside a dead-looking Vincent robot. who shakily gets up and flies off. Hans shows an incredible energy source to the crew just off screen, and Harry wanders off. Dan's also on his own and sees a group of robots in the distance carrying a coffin in a kind of funeral ceremony looking thing. That's weird. Harry finds a single robed figure by a massive garden, a robot, but one with a limp. Strange. On the bridge, Hans asks Durant if he's interested in black holes in a very, are you interested in movies about gladiators kind of way? And yes, Durant's very excited by all of this, and they're going to have a chat over dinner. When they walk past some robots who seem to be shooting at space, Dan suggests Vincent make friends with them. They're actually doing some kind of target shooting game, and the other Vincent unit, or Bob, as he's actually called, is there. He points out that the hotshot of the robots is Captain Star. He's the top dog, and he beat Bob up after losing to him at a shooting game. At dinner, Hans says they need to stop wandering off unaccompanied. You'll see all the suspicious stuff that way. He gives them mushroom soup and wine that is made in the gardens. He toasts and says, they're the only people that know he exists, which feels kind of like a threat. And then, yeah.
It would be a shame if something happened to you.
It would, wouldn't it? But no, he has a probe coming back to the ship from the black hole, and he plans on flying in through and beyond the black hole. That's madness, yes, but it's madness that wouldn't have had any witnesses, and now he's got them, so he's happy about this. When Hans is out of the room, Harry suggests, let's just fucking take Hans and the ship back home. We'll get a big reward this way. Fair. Bob tells Vincent to meet him in parts storage. No, not for a knee trembler. They don't have knees. Instead, to tell him all of the secrets, but this is a ship of death. Oh no, that's the worst kind. He shows off these like weird merry-go-round devices, like in that one Star Trek episode. And this one also turns people into robots. And this is where the crew went after Mr. McCrae tried to mutiny. Bob says, these are more robot than human. And then they shoot some sentries and hide their bodies behind a desk in hopes of covering their crime up, like me doing really badly at Hitman. Dan wants to leave in the ship and get away from all this nonsense, as for one sensible person here. Back with Hans, Kate and Durant are chatting. He wants to stay, and she gets a telepathic signal from Vincent saying, yeah, we need to go to the Palomino. And Durant is drinking the Kool-Aid at this point. Hans tells him to stick around and record what's going on, no matter what the others say. Kate says, yeah, we need to get the fuck out of here. And she does it in front of Hans, who's like, shit, now my plan's got to escalate as well. Vincent explains everything telepathically to Kate. And she tells Durant the robots are people. Kate has no idea what subtlety is here. Durant is a little shaken by this, pulls a mask off a robot. It's a dead body. Oh no. Hans says, yes. And they'd be dead if they weren't dead reanimated robots. So that's fine, right? They flee. Maximilian corners them, doing his spinny hand thing into Durant, who was killed and flung aside. And Hans is really upset, 'cause that was the one he actually liked out of this lot. Hans points the Cygnus towards a black hole and aims to shoot it in there, but while Dan, Vincent and Bob start their rescue mission to get Kate back. Hans says to liquidate our guests, setting off alarms, sending out sentries. They meet up with Kate, and the humans disguise themselves as robots to get past the sentries, but there's a big shootout nonetheless. Vincent and Bob fly up into the air, shooting the sentries. And Pizer joins them, and Harry takes the opportunity to fly away on the Palomino like a big fucking coward. He immediately gets shot down by the robots, and that leaves the crew in the lurch until they remember, there's that probe. We could all fit in that, right? There's a big shootout in the garden, and everything there gets ruined. The bridge is shaking. Hans is trying to increase power to maximum, ignoring structural warnings. Robots are falling down everywhere. Hans asks Maximilian, get the probe ready. And just after he's left, Hans gets crushed by a falling screen. He shouts out to Maximilian and to his robots, but they've all got orders they're following, and none of them listen to him. Everything gets all smoky and red, and the Cygnus gets closer to the event horizon. Maximilian pops up, shoots Bob, and then spins angrily at Vincent, who headbutts him. Oh my god, for violence. The others escape, and there's an oddly slow chase of Maximilian versus Vincent. A big grapple, and then Vincent sticks a horrible little drill in Maximilian. It sounds utterly horrid, and then he's tossed aside by Vincent and falls into the black hole. Dan, Pizer, Kate, and Bob are in an apocalyptic room preparing a probe. Hans is watching everything blow up.
So close.
Just like Hans, I'm helpless as it's all falling apart in front of me.
Also, I think Bob gets killed by Maximilian. It's Vincent who makes it to the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There are two Henry Hoovers in this film.
There are. I literally just have, we get a tragic Bob death scene as my next line.
All right. Okay, so, and finish off.
So we get a tragic Bob death scene. And then Pizer floats away, barely getting saved by Vincent. Inside the probe, it's a bit of a squeeze, but it'll do. And they lift off. There's one last problem, though. As the Cygnus circles the drain, the probe will only follow the pre-programmed directions, which are also going into the black hole. Hopefully, Hans is, you know, a good mad scientist and was correct, and it'll be fine. We'll see. Then everything goes weird in a way where you can see they wanted to do a 2001, but can't quite manage it. Everything goes all stretchy and stuttery. We get some inner monologues. Kate's going, oh, my dead dad. Dan is like, the horror. Vincent's like, damn, me and Bob were really cool. And then we see Hans alive, floating in space outside the ship somehow. Not quite sure how he got there, but he floats over to Maximilian and the two embrace, and then they merge. And then we see Hans inside a kind of Maximilian suit stood atop a rock, and there's fire, weird outcroppings of rocks and hooded figures trudging around. Is this hell? Is this literal hell? Oh, Yeah, we are confirmed this is actually hell, guys. There's a celestial hallway, a light at the end of a tunnel, and a winged woman flying ahead, kind of angelic, maybe some kind of ghost. And then whoosh, they're floating in space, normal space. Did they literally go to heaven and then back into reality? Yeah, at the end. Roll credits.
1:53.
So, literal. I did not expect literal hell and heaven to be seen here. What the fuck, Miles?
Now, Charlie. Now, do you see why I've been telling you to watch the black hole for the entirety of this podcast?
So I have questions that I've written down here. Given the presence of telepathy, does Vincent have a human brain? Someone like put a brain into a bin that is somehow the most competent person there?
You know what? More than like, given the rest of the shit that happens in this film, I'm not discounting it. Okay, it was interesting that you thought that they were like that. The people that the robot crew were like killed and turned into robots like the Cybermen. I just assumed that they were lobotomized.
Maybe. I don't know. I just figured, okay, yeah, he'd have probably just killed them. Or yeah, maybe he tinkered with their brains, did something to mess with them. And then you've got your crew of ominous robed guys. And with the expectation no one would see them, you have given them ominous hoods and robes and mirror faceplates. Like, what's with the mirror faceplates?
It is that thing that every accusation is a confession.
Yeah. Just, like, it was incredible seeing that. So, back when I ran D&D 3rd edition, we had a troop game where each player would take a turn being DM for the day, which I figured this would help stop my burnout with having two weekly groups, my need to over prep, and the fact that during the D20 glut, I bought too many adventures. So I was like, have adventures. I've read almost none of them. Check these out, run them, especially if you're not confident. And of course, eventually it just came back to me running it constantly instead. But during the troop time when we were passing things around, I might have gone a bit horror with mine. They're in a weird endless forest, and there were experiments and mad science things going on underneath the forest where adventurers were being made into horrid zombie type things. It was like a pitcher plant trap for adventurers. And they were given these mirror-like faceplates that were nailed on. And yeah, it was like, it brought me right back to that. It's like, shit. Yeah, like you have removed their identity, and the most you can see is simply yourself reflected in them. Yeah. I loved the sets. The sets were gorgeous. It had some of that classic cinema kind of things, the lights from rooms which were made into fake big long shadows when Dan was going through the quarters, the weird funeral stuff. Like, you could tell this was after Star Wars and 2001 and wanting to do bits of both but not really sure what it was doing.
See, I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think this script had been written before Star Wars, back when science fiction cinema was a lot more Logan's Run, 2001 A Space Odyssey,
yeah,
Soylent Green, a lot darker, a lot more dystopian. Because in a way, this is kind of the Poseidon Adventure in space, if the Poseidon Adventure was a fucking horror movie.
Yeah, yeah. And you get so much empty space in it as well at the start.
And then, like, a little film called Star Wars came out and it was really popular, and everyone wants a bit of that Star Wars money. Like, Roger Corman is making a whole bunch of Star Wars knockoffs over there. Italy is giving Caroline Munro the best outfits to work with in Star Crash. And meanwhile, Disney are like, we want the Star Wars money, but we're not going to settle on the idea of actually just buying the IP outright for another 30 years. So let's take this script, it's set in space, and then let's just kind of put in some cute robots and laser fights. Should we cut out any of the stuff that is very much not for kids? Nah, fuck it. We want to get those Ernest Borgnine action figures out for our Christmas quarter.
Hell yeah. So, Vincent and Bob, like, why? Why are they somehow... Vincent more so is just really annoying as a person. Like, socially annoying. He speaks almost always in quotes and aphorisms, and somehow is also the most competent one there. The only one that's really good at shooting anyone, aside from Bob, who is... Like, what if you hit Vincent with a baseball bat, which is what they did to try and get the impression of this is how used and damaged we want him to look. But, like, it's like, what if T-Bob was better but still not good?
What if No-No from Ulysses 31 was a badass?
Yeah, yeah. And again, somehow also worse.
I think it's like a weird Cronenberg fusion of what if R2-D2's capacity for violence and his general shape, but he had C-3PO's personality.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. Just merge them two into one form, put them in the machine from the fly or a transporter accident, and there you go. You've got Vincent. I got so pissed off with him early on, because I found him very annoying. An uncredited Roddy McDowall does a fine job as Vincent, but he is annoying all throughout it. And then, of course, once you get to the shooting target practice, where it genuinely did look like those sentries were firing into space wildly, You know, it's like I always say about how when I go to stay at Ramsgate, on a sunny day, you can see France on the other side, and you just get a bunch of Kentish folks shaking their fists in that direction. It felt like that. Like, are they shooting at the black hole? But no. From that point onward, Vincent actually gets on mission. I mean, he still keeps with the terrible quotes. But, yeah, like, I'm sure I've seen toys of him around. So I recognize that. But...
I know there were toys because there's the old, I think there's, like, Edgar Wright has joked about, you know, there are when you know, there are kids who got, like, the Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. And then there are the kids who got the action figure of Ernest Borgnine in the black hole. And he was that kid.
Yeah, yeah, God. And Ernest Borgnine, like, it was it felt like it was mandatory in old science fiction to just have an old coot in with your spaceship.
Just have an established British, you know, an established American character actor. You know, you got to have your Obi-Wan type. You've got, like, the captain who's kind of your grizzled Han Solo. You've got your annoying kid who says woohoo. And then you've got, like, Ernest Borgnine as the grizzled, like, old-timer who is Obi-Wan if Obi-Wan were a cowardly shit. And if things got hectic on the Death Star, he just booked on the Millennium Falcon.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he, I think he was a journalist.
Yeah.
Or something, but I didn't quite pick up what he actually was doing aside from giving bad advice repeatedly.
I think he's just there to chronicle the space mission, because you know what you need if you're on a 5-year mission? Fucking Jimmy Olsen hanging about going, okay, this is very interesting.
I mean, I would rather Jimmy Olsen than this guy. Boy's trouble, but it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, Jimmy Olsen's not going to claim he has an old war wound. Because Harry just kind of does, like, the Basil Fawlty, oh, just a touch of shrapnel from Korea, and then runs away.
Yeah, you fucking coward. Honestly, I expected, because I tend to, in our show document, write down the cast, or if it's Star Trek, write down, you know, the guest stars guest and cast. Such, because that way I can remember whose name is, like, what, who is who, even though in my own notes I will constantly misspell them. But when I saw as Captain Star, I expected way more. I expected way more than, like, compared to all the red sentries, this is the same, but slightly more gimp suit. And he's going to do some shooting and apparently bully a much better shot.
So
okay, and just gets shot and killed.
So apparently Hans Reinhardt built these robots. And then I guess when he was bored, he's like, what if I made one with a personality of evil gunslinger from a 1950s Western? What if I basically made him Jack Palance from Shane?
Yeah. Yeah, or just, like, I don't know, the fact that he's a bit of a bully and a coward, despite being a robot as a sharpshooter, it's like, okay, so what if Starscream couldn't talk? So yeah, you've removed everything fun about having a Weasley second in command here. So yeah, why not have him appear in two scenes and get destroyed
immediately?
Yeah,
that feels like a note. That feels like a note from, like, the producers going, "Hey, can we differentiate some robots so we can have, like, a repaint for the toys?" And, like, yeah, fuck it, we just gotta kill them off though.
Yeah.
God.
Okay, another question I have.
Okay, one thing. This film also has a link to Twin Peaks. The space captain, Robert Forster, plays the replacement Sheriff Truman in Twin Peaks The Return.
I knew I recognized him from somewhere. Yeah, good. So yeah, keeping with the Twin Peaks references from last episode. Perfect. So... okay, here's the first question I had after watching all of this. Did Vincent see heaven? As a robot.
he saw Silica in heaven.
Okay, good, because yeah,
he got to see where all the calculators go.
That's all right then. So yeah, he'd have seen a floating calculator instead of an angel going through the celestial hallway. Because yeah, again, like, I don't know, maybe if he was a human brain put in a robot, it's like, cool, you've got canonical heaven and hell here. So I guess, yeah, a robot can perceive heaven.
So, this is why, you know, when people summarize the film saying, and then everything goes straight to hell, it's not just a comment about the quality of the film.
Yeah. So would it have taken much work for this to have been made into a prequel to Event Horizon?
I mean, not at all. I mean, I think the Anthony Perkins character would have had more, like, literally, we'd have seen his fucking innards.
Yeah. Oh, God. All of this, I was watching and was like, if this wasn't a PG, like, you could do a very good, modern, real gruesome remake. Because people get fucked up here.
Yeah.
You've got your crew of ominous cult-looking zombies all over the place. You've got hands crushed by a TV, Anthony Perkins, spinny, bladed, and then flung aside by Maximilian. Like, Maximilian's spinny blades are so small and spinny around kind of at tit level. It's weird seeing it all. Similar to the little lasers that Bob and Vincent have, which they seem to have to reposition themselves constantly to shoot them. But I could see as a child someone in a playground doing that kind of thing.
The sad kid who everyone else is playing Star Wars and he's like, and I'm Bob from the black hole.
Yeah, I've got a bin lid on my head.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Were Hans Reinhardt and Maximilian in a weird kind of Dom sub relationship? Because you have that point after Anthony Perkins gets Maximilian that Hans just leans into the female scientist and goes, "Protect me from Maximilian."
Yeah.
And then you
that
have the
was
weird
a moment that led to nothing. It was like, "Yes, I need help from this guy." So you don't, though. About a scene later, like, whatever act you had going on, Kate didn't believe you. And, yeah, you were still working with Maximilian all along
anyway. Then you have the moment when they're in the black hole, when it looks like they're falling into bed together.
It does. I was like, are they going to kiss? I know Maximilian doesn't have a mouth.
I always,
but, you know.
I always loved you, Maximilian.
I think there's definitely something going on, some kind of relationship, but I think it's going to be one of those ones that's, because there's a power structure going on, it's too weird to put a name on it.
Maybe Maximilian can actually speak, but he and Reinhardt are fighting, so he is very pointedly not speaking.
Yeah, they got into a bit of a tiff before the all the people came on board. So no, you deal with them, Hans, if you're so sociable.
Oh no, in my head, Maximilian sounds like John Waters.
I'd love that. Oh,
look,
my
if
God.
We have fucking Roddy McDowall playing Vincent, we have, I don't know, I think it's Slim Pickens.
Yep.
Like playing old Prospector Bot. So yeah, John Waters is Maximilian.
Perfect.
Or like Harvey Fierstein.
Yeah, that'd work too. I mean, yeah, if it was John Waters, you'd want some reference to, like, some bit of paint job on the underside for where the mouth would be so that it would look like he's got a little tash. Yeah. Yeah, God. I mean, it sounds like this was a mess to make as well, which is 100% understandable.
Yeah.
It looks like it's both, it's taking, as you've said, like, the classic Hollywood kind of moments, the sets, gorgeous theatrical things that are beautiful but completely unwieldy, and then the schlockiest kind of science fiction ever. Apparently, the science was so bad that the novelization by Alan Dean Foster, he was appalled by the science.
I do actually own a novelization. I read it years ago. The ending is a lot different. Like,
so no literal heaven and hell?
No literal heaven and hell. Like, they get sucked into the black hole. And have you ever read the Red Dwarf novels?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, in Better Than Life, the cat, Crichton, the Rimmer and Talky Toaster get sucked through a black hole, and they all merge into one, into one being, and they can all understand everyone else's minds. It's basically that, but somehow less horrifying. Because if you're going to have a science, if you're going to have a novelization of like the new hit film, get Alan Dean Foster to write the novelization. He did for Aliens. He did for Last Starfighter, Krull, The Thing, which is impossible to get a hold of a copy. That is really expensive.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize he'd done a Thing one.
He did one of
It feels like it's mandatory, you know, to show up and go, so I'm doing your novelization. So who are you?
Who are you?
I'm Alan Dean Foster, obviously.
I'm Alan Dean Foster, me. Here's my novelization of Star Wars. Here's my novelization of Star Trek the Motion Picture. All the horny stuff is jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, speaking of horny stuff, I did see old friend of the podcast, Harlan Ellison, as a scientific consultant for this. And apparently fired after pitching an animated porn movie featuring Disney characters in earshot of one of the Disneys themselves.
Apparently, according to urban legend, Harlan Ellison was also doing impressions.
Oh my god, I wish that could have been seen.
Oh,
that would have been amazing. But, of course, that feels like a very Harlan Ellison thing to have done.
Same time as like, go on, okay. You know, at the same time, you know Harlan's onto something.
Well, predating Rule 34.
I mean, Fritz the Cat was a thing.
Okay, fair.
So, like, it's not as if we've not had films where cartoon animals fuck.
Well, yeah, but I mean, other people's intellectual property.
That's true, yeah.
You know.
Tijuana Bibles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which I know because of Watchmen and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, No other reason, not because I'm a pervert in my own time.
Yeah, I definitely don't have an X-Men-based one that I picked up at Thought Bubble last year.
Wait, seriously?
Seriously.
How did you not tell me that you had this?
So I bought, there was a little, it was an enveloped X-Men comic thing that I bought, and I didn't realize it came with a Tijuana Bible as well. I was like, ha! Okay. I only found out when I'd forgotten I'd bought it, to be honest, until I started packing up my office. So, yeah. So I only briefly saw it. I was like, ho! Oh, wow! Okay. Yeah, this all makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, oh my god, like this, I unironically really like this film. Partially because, like, there is I have a soft spot for films where it really looks like it was kind of a mess to make.
Yeah.
But also, it's one of those organic messes. Because I feel like one of the big problems with a lot of, especially the big budget blockbuster kind of movies, is that everything is kind of focus grouped and producer notes to hell.
Yeah.
Whereas here, there is this very organic weirdness of, okay, we have a very metaphysical film. And a lot of, we want to kind of talk about the musings of obsession, of man's place in the cosmos. And then also, but we want cute robots and laser guns to kind of make it sell. And you end up with a very messy but very enjoyable film. And I'd rather see a film that tries, fails, but is entertaining than something which was basically hashed out in a whole bunch of meetings to try and satisfy everybody, and you end up with something kind of dull.
Well, yeah, compared to a film like Rise of Skywalker, which has a lot of that, trying to please too many mostly imagined masters, given you guys the ones that could have planned a trilogy at the start of a trilogy, and maybe not keep rewriting it while you're filming it. Like, from what I've seen, there may have been terrible horrors going on to the cast, but it didn't look like... It looked like all of the problems were that they couldn't afford Vincent to be as fancy as they wanted. You know, there were things that they had to cut and things that were ludicrous excesses. This did not make its money. And understandably so. Like, this was a first big flop because look at it. It's gorgeous. There's a meteor, like a meteorite shower partway through with the biggest rolling lava ball. And the meteors, it looks beautifully psychedelic. It looks like the space amoeba that they penetrate in the original series. It's gorgeous. It is not necessarily great. It's still got the classic, like, 50s, 60s science fiction crew. But there's something beautiful about it. Hans, again, I'm envious of the beard, the outfit, the whole fit.
Oh, the outfit! Wonderful. The outfit I loved with Hans Reinhardt the most wasn't his nifty red number. Is the lab coat and the buttoned shirt, which he clearly hasn't washed in a few years. And then there is that bit when the two scientists are talking about getting out, and then Hans just walks into the room, and then there's like the fucking close up where he looks psychotic.
Oh god,
like,
he is
in a room with Anthony Perkins. And he is the psychotic looking one.
Yeah. Like, we didn't get, it felt like, if anything, cast wise, we didn't get quite enough of Anthony Perkins, but watching him getting increasingly like hands pilled with this was great. Of like, you know, he is so on board for all.
Oh yeah. Perkins is one of those great actors who is very good at doing twitchy. And that's honestly like what makes him really good in Psycho, is that when he first arrives, he is like all American boy, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. Then you just watch him get increasingly twitchy throughout the film. And you have the same thing here, up to a point where he pulls the mask off one of the lobotomized robot guys. And it's like, what the hell?
That was so good. Such a good reaction. And that was the director.
Oh, and yeah. I'll be honest, that's a fucking Doctor Who cliffhanger.
It really
that's
is. Like,
that's an episode, end of episode 2 cliffhanger, which is bah, Sting.
Oh my god, it's people.
It's people.
Yeah. Oh no, these robots. It's Cybermen again. Oh no.
Oh no.
Oh fuck, not again. Yeah, this feels like the perfect kind of example of what would come on in things like a lot of those Doctor Who plots in Event Horizon and a lot of kind of like, space horror.
I think, hang on, when did Alien come out?
Before this.
Okay.
But I know this because I found out the casting department vetoed Sigourney Weaver as Kate's role because her name was not attractive.
It's Sigourney fucking Weaver.
It's Sigourney Weaver.
They had to airbrush out her entire bush.
Yeah. Imagine being the person doing that.
Oh god, imagine in the weird alternate universe where the Ernest Borgnine role is done by Harry Dean Stanton from Oh man, that would be, as much as I love Borgnine, that would be kind of awesome because
Oh, then your twitchy coward would be really good fun.
Oh yeah, and you know who'd have like a roll up just perched behind one ear, like it's just it is that weird thing because also the parts where it just kind of feels like an anachronism is that the spaceship, the Cygnus, is beautiful, but suffers from that, you know, it still has that very kind of 1950s Forbidden Planet view of sci-fi technology, which is this doesn't look like a real, you know, it looks amazing. How does this work in real life? We have no fucking clue. And, you know, they still haven't caught up to the post-Star Wars, post-Alien of, we're going to make this stuff look tactile and like kit people would actually use.
Yeah, why did you put all these gigantic halls in here? Why does it take several lifts and stairs and a go-kart and
why have we built a turbo lift system, which is basically a ride at that's the ride. It's advertising Black Hole the ride, which is the trip through the signal. Oh god.
Yeah.
I would fucking go on that, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I would go on the Black Hole the ride.
See, if this had done well, then yeah, I'm sure it would be a ride at Disneyland. When I say that, for all I know it is, I'm not a theme park guy. I physically cannot go on them because of my haunted spine.
Oh.
But yeah. Yeah.
But so like on the whole, yeah. What were your final final thoughts on the Black Hole? Okay.
I really enjoyed it. I think it might be a little long I'm gonna bung this on and inflict this at a lot of people. But I can easily see myself rewatching this. It's got such a good atmosphere. The horrors that take place, even though we don't see like 18 rated horrors, there are some horrors. I'm sure some kids got nightmares from this. So yeah, all good.
Given our experience with Space 1999, were you expecting Reinhardt to start talking about his breeding program?
I mean, if he had kept the humans alive somehow, then yes. But yeah, when he was like, these are robots, it's like, okay, so he's not doing a breeding program. But yeah, he's got a lot of that Space 1999 enemy energy going on. Which I can only approve of, really, as a fan of space horror.
I like you as much as I enjoy this film. This isn't a film which this is not one of those films which, when I discovered at 15, I would inflict on all my friends. Yeah. Like, it's not a bad taste or The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Because I was when I discovered that film, I was obnoxiously like, okay, you need to watch this film. It makes no sense. 90% of the cast is called John.
Wow. Yeah, that's another one I've never actually seen.
Well, there we go. Next summer we'll do Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Okay. Yeah, but this summer, this has been our casual diversion from the usual Star Trek. And yeah, I think if you've got Disney Plus or anything, check out The Black Hole. It's surprisingly good.
Okay, one last question.
Oh.
In terms of 80s Disney's sci-fi films, which were meant to like boot big franchises but didn't do well.
Yeah.
The Black Hole or Tron?
It's been a long time since I've seen Tron, but despite the visuals being great with Tron, I will tell you something. It can get a bit boring.
Yeah.
It's a bit more boring than I'd have liked. And I've seen it a number of times as a kid.
There's a lull. Same with Tron. Like, I enjoy Tron Legacy, but I'll be honest, when there are parts where Daft Punk isn't playing, there are points when the film does kind of drag. And on the whole, I enjoy the film, but like, it is kept afloat by the fantastic Daft Punk score. This also, gotta say, had a fantastic score by John Barry.
Yes,
he did the Bond theme.
Yeah.
I always mistake him with Barry Gray, who did all the Gerry Anderson stuff, but and also works in that kind of big bombastic bum 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 bum.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's very good. Very dramatic music. And yeah, that start was, it was slow to start, but immersed you nicely in when it got to the weird green grid kind of.
Not enough films have overtures anymore. It's like Star Trek The Motion Picture opens up with an overture before getting to the main credits.
Yes. Well, which came out, what was it, 13 days before this. So yeah, two of the last films with big overtures.
Mm. Okay, last question before we head out. Black Hole or Star Trek The Motion Picture?
See, I think for me it would be Black Hole.
And your Oath of Celibate?
Both are very good, but this, it's, the horrors faced in this are so much fun.
And your Oath of Celibacy is not on record.
Yeah, yeah. Right, on that, what is on record is that next time we'll probably be doing something involving Star Trek.
Oh yeah, we do that, don't we?
We do. We do talk about Star Trek sometimes. So, yeah, best get out of that black hole, out of literal heaven and hell, even though I think that we have seen literal devil in Star Trek. And yeah, so if you like what we do, you could always follow us on social media where we are Casual Trek, either on Blue Sky or Facebook. We are also at ko-fi.com/casualtrek if you want to bung us some money and suggest either some concepts, themes, species, anything that you want us to build an episode around, or, you know, frankly, what blind spots have I got in my knowledge of science fiction, TV and film that I should actually look at? Not Blake Seven.
Sorry. Sorry. Mm. I'm on my phone looking at AO3 because I was curious to see how many black hole fics are tagged on AO3 and what there are two. One of which is a crossover with Blake Seven.
Oh god. Okay, is the other one just Hans and Maximilian?
No, but I might need to write it now.
Okay. Before you do that, where can folks find you?
They can find me on my Blue Sky at milesreedlibato.bsky.social or my blog at mareedlibato.wordpress.com. If they find me anywhere in the real world, get away from me unless you owe me money.
And you can find me on itch.io and Blue Sky as Sky Shark, and over on Fate Tales, where I am currently reviewing the Final Girl board game. And probably other things by now, because we are recording this ahead some way. Other than that, I guess we normally say go do a Starfleet, but don't do what Hans Reinhardt does.
Don't do a Borg 9. Stick by your friends and crewmates.
Yeah, otherwise robots will kill you.
Yeah.
You don't want that, do you?
But you know what you do like?
Hmm?
Eating a jelly baby.
Yeah. You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and Tie podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Star Trek by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.